5, 6, 7, 8. Eli.
Yes.
Great. Love.
And she claps. She's a true podcaster. We love it. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Gilmore to Say with Tara and Haley. I'm Tara. This is Haley. Hi, Haley.
Hi, Tara.
It's a little bit of a Gilmore to read. Kind of a Gilmore to read, Gilmore to Say combo, if you will.
Yeah, a little combo. Gilmore to Say read.
Yeah,
Gilmore to Say read. And read.
Yeah.
Gilmore to read and then say.
Yeah. We read it. Now we have stuff to say. And speaking of, we had Eli Rallo on who wrote I Didn't Know I Needed This, which was our March pick for Reading is Sexy. And we also had her as our guest on our live show for our very first live show back in October here in New York City. And she was just such a joy to have. She was about to do her book tour. She actually was in the midst of recording the audiobook for this book when she came to join us at our live show as our guest. And we just had such a great time with her. We wanted to have her back to talk about her book, to talk about kind of the rules she lays out in I Didn't Know I Needed This, and to see how they applied to the Gilmore Girls and talk about her relationship with the show, you know, some of her thoughts and hot takes that she had, which I'm really excited to share with you all. We were so excited back in October to share one of her hot takes with you guys because it's a little, it's hot. But again, as I mentioned in the last episode, she kind of comes with facts to back it up. We didn't necessarily get a chance to get into those in this episode because we had such a limited time with Eli today, but she presented some interesting opinions that I'm really excited to hear how y'all feel about.
Yeah, especially as they relate to her book, because her book is I Didn't Know I Needed This, The New Rules for Flirting, Feeling, and Finding Yourself. And we relate back to it in Gilmore Girls a lot because there's some chapters that they really could have benefited from. We're looking at you, Rory Gilmore.
Rory Gilmore was all over this.
Yeah. And I talk about this in the episode, but I loved one of our listeners who is married and talked about how she read this, didn't necessarily need the rules for dating anymore because she is happily married. But she looked back on it on how younger her could have used it and needed it, which I loved so much. It felt so nostalgic, which is the exact reason that we watch Gilmore Girls to kind of, I guess, I like remember a lot of when I'm rewatching Gilmore Girls, what it was like that first time I watched it.
Totally.
So I feel like even if you're in a relationship, you can still read this book and get something out of it, especially because she talks about rules for friendship, which are equal part relationship to a romantic relationship in her opinion and in our opinion.
Oh, 100%. She talks about how friendship breakups in this book are sometimes harder than romantic breakups. And I could not agree more. Friendship breakups are hard. They're really hard to navigate. And also they can be really slow. It can be like a long goodbye in a way. And so, you know, when you grow apart from someone or you have a fight and you, you know, stop talking, it just hurts a little bit deeper. I don't want to equate it to all relationships because, of course, you know, we build really strong bonds with those that we're romantically linked to as well. But there's just something different about a friendship breakup. And that one really resonated with me. A lot of her book resonated with me.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the case. It's like no matter where you're at, whether you're single, you're in your early 20s, late 20s, married, there's some part of this book that I feel like you'll relate to. And a little bit about Eli. I'll read her bio from the back in case you have never encountered Eli. Eli Rallo is a social media star with massive followings on TikTok and Instagram. She is the host of Miss Congeniality podcast and a graduate of Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism and the University of Michigan School of Music, Theater, and Dance. When she isn't writing or TikToking, you can find her at piano bars in the village belting out show tunes.
She is
the theater girl after our own hearts.
And she has thoughts and feelings about the musical in the revival.
She does.
She has thoughts on the revival that you guys will be very interested to hear.
And hopefully we'll have her back. But in the meantime, here is Eli Rallo. But I will say I was going to wear a Canadian tuxedo today for you, but it was too hot in my room, so I had to take my jean jacket off, but I really wanted to do it because I felt like, you know, like in the rules, because like it was too hot for a sexy sweater, but like I was going to go with a Canadian tuxedo.
You were going to go with a Canadian tuxedo. It's not really our first date. It's kind of our second date because you were with us. We've met before. You were with us. So Eli Rallo is here with us. We're so excited. She was our live event guest, our very first one. because we've never done a live event before, and you were our first guest, which was really exciting, and you had some really wonderful takes about Gilmore Girls. You had just you were just about to launch your book tour, and so we're really happy to have you back to talk all things I Didn't Know I Needed This and Gilmore Girls. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun at your first little live event that we did together that I was so excited to be a guest on the pod.
I know. Welcome.
Yeah, we loved it so much. I know when we were trying to schedule it, you were actually recording your audiobook. And so we were like, we kept missing you because you were like in the throes of doing that, which was so like, it's so much fun to look back on, especially having listened to the audiobook, that's what you were doing then.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
It has been a whirl.
Yes. So you are in New York City. Before we get into this, how was your eclipse? Was it good?
It was good. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Like, I was a little bit underwhelmed. Like, I don't want to, like, talk shit on
me,
my
eclipse.
Me,
too.
But
like, we were like, what?
I thought that it was going to get, like, actually, like, the videos I saw in Dallas. So I think I was just, there was a bit of misinformation coming toward me when I was like, oh, like, what is an eclipse? Because in 2017, I don't think I was in the path of, like, seeing it at all. And then people had shown me, like, videos of, like, total darkness. And when they were saying it's going to get, like, 95% dark in New Jersey, I was like, oh, my God, that's going to be, like, super dark and cool. And it definitely did get dark, don't get me wrong. And I had the glasses. Yeah. I could, like, see what was going on. But it didn't get, like, pitch dark. Like, it looked like a cloudy day. And it kind of bummed me out because I was like, we were having a lovely sunny day. And then it was like,
I know.
It was so nice. Yes. The first one in like weeks. It's been gloomy, cloudy, rainy,
it's
shitty
terrible.
Out.
Yes.
And then it was sunny. And then it was like, wait a second. No, no. And like, around 2:15, it was like all clouds. I was like, yeah, come back, please. And then it was just cloudy the rest of the day. I was like, this was such a letdown. Haley came back. We took like a little break. And she was like, that was really underwhelming. Do you want to hop back on? And I was like, yeah.
Not to be a hater of the eclipse, but I was like, this is it.
No, I don't want to be a hater either, because I was actually like getting upset yesterday when people were like, I don't give a fuck about the eclipse. And I was like, okay, like, why do you have to like dampen everybody else's mood? Like, some of us are like enjoying this. Some of us like want to go outside and look at it. So why do you have to like tell me that you like are shitting on it? And then after I saw it, I was like, maybe I should have been in the other camp.
Maybe I also kind of can relate. It's so funny. I couldn't really see it from my, I have a little terrace out here and I couldn't really see it. But there is a guy in the building behind me who was losing his fucking mind. He had the glasses on. He was like pressed up against his window and he was like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And I was like, okay, calm down.
Honestly, though, good for people that like really enjoyed it to the fullest. Like my brother really likes science. Like I don't really care for science, but my brother is like super sciencey. Like he wanted to be an astronaut when he was a kid, so like he loves shit like that. So I'm like, you know what, whatever, like if it's gonna keep the girls entertained, like let them.
I love seeing the pictures in Central Park of everyone just like together, because I love moments like that where everyone is just like, we just all come together to watch, to look at the sun.
Exactly. And there's like hardly things like that, I feel like, in the world these days. So it's definitely not.
Totally.
It's like cute. It's like a cute human thing. Like if we could like explain like us in like really soft ways, I feel like that's definitely one of them.
100%.
But I feel like you are someone who, you talked about this in your book, that you like always look for silver linings. And I feel like that is definitely one of them, where you're like, just like people who enjoy things. So even if like you are a hater about it, you never like let the hate get too deep, even if something as simple as the eclipse.
Yeah. I also just like, I don't really understand like hater mentality. Like I'm definitely somebody that'll like silently hate on something. Like, I always say I'm like a silent hater. Where, like, if something, like, comes across my desk and I'm like, oh, like, I don't fuck with that. Like, maybe I'll, like, talk to my boyfriend about it or call my best friend or, like, send her a voice memo that's, like, a podcast about it. But I'm not going to, like, get in the comment section and start, like, hating. Unless it's, like, you know, someone's being homophobic. But let's just say someone's just, like.
Unless it's deserved,
Someone's doing something that, like, maybe I'm not. It's not something I want to do. Or, like, for some reason it rubs me the wrong way. But it's just, like, a taste thing and just, like, a personality difference. Like. Why be a hater? Like it's so much like, maybe it's like easy to do that, but it's like so much easier to just not, in my opinion. Like let people have their fun.
I think that being three women who kind of started in short form content on TikTok and, you know, gained traction in a variety of different ways. At least for me, it taught me a lot about kind of stepping back and allowing people, like, people are just going to be in the comments. They're going to be. I'm not going to participate in that because I'm not going to yuck somebody's yum. In the same way that it was sometimes really hard when people would try to yuck my yum in the comments, and I'd be like, what are you doing here? Why is this necessary? So I think that when you start out, especially in short form content in social media, in the way that we have, and the way that, like, social media has kind of started to dominate our world, it makes it a lot easier to be able to take a step back and be like, okay, I'm not going to cloud my day with this. It's not necessary.
100%.
I do want you to hold on to that, like, idea of the hater mentality, because I do want to talk about your book, but I want to get into Gilmore Girls a little bit later. And, like, that is definitely something that exists, like, perpetually in the fandom. But before we do, hold on to that, because I want to talk about, I didn't know I needed this, which is here behind me. Beautiful, beautiful cover.
Thank you. Gorgeous cover.
And I just, like, congratulations. I feel like anyone who talks about wanting to be a writer or an author growing up, to, like, see this, and, like, I'm not gonna lie, I kind of teared up. Like, I barely know you, but when you said, like, when you're reading your audiobook and you said, this is the author, I just, like my eyes got, like, misty, because I was like, that's what she's wanted to do her whole life. Here she is, and now she is the author, and she's reading this. And I just was like, I didn't even know you that well, but here I am crying over, like, your dreams coming true.
Thank you.
So I feel like I have to say congratulations before we get into it. But for anyone who hasn't read it, because I know that this was our book club pick for March, but a lot of our listeners are not in the book club. So for anyone who's not, can you tell us what I Didn't Know I Needed This is about?
Sure. So I Didn't Know I Needed This is a personal essay book. It falls under the genre narrative nonfiction. So to give you guys, like, an idea, I think, you know, they would call Dolly Alderton books more like memoir, but something like a Gia Tolentino book, you know, she writes personal essays. So it's a collection of 14 personal essays, but they have similar themes woven through them. And it takes you through the life cycle of being in a relationship, from being single to being single again. So you get first date, second date, situationships, sex, dating, heartbreak, friendship. And it's really about elevating your life in really tangible, accessible ways, but especially through the lens of our relationships, whether that's friendship, romantic relationship, or the relationship that you have to yourself. So it kind of steers between, I hate, like, advice as a term, because it feels like it's so, like, prescriptive, but I would say, like, you know, analysis of, like, my own experiences and what I learned and took away, and, you know, things that I now integrate into my life that just make it a little bit sunnier and easier. I think that's the best way I could describe it. I actually haven't done that in a while, because I was on, like, I was on a podcast circuit for, like, all of November and December and January. And now I, like, feel like I haven't done one in a while. So I'm like, whoa, like, I'm pulling that one out of
just right out of the back pocket. Yeah. I was going to ask if you had something prepared, and I was going to ask you how many times you've had to recite that over and over and over again.
Definitely a lot, but it's, like, it never gets old. You know, I love talking about it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I feel like the genre, like, it doesn't even exist, but it's like talking to a friend, because, like, I know that a lot of the times you, like, have considered yourself as, like, an older sister of the internet, and, like, that was so true, because I, like, both read it and listened to it, and it kind of felt like I was, like, we were at that, like, stage in our friendship of, like, that, like, one night where we get together and we learn everything about each other that night, and it's told, like, in, like, very, like, throughout the chapters, like, the rules, like, you learn various pieces of the men in your life, the friends in your life, but you don't learn it all at once. And I really love the way that's told, and how, like, the boys all come back, and, like, the rules that are learned. And our book club really loved this, but I think that the one in particular that I really loved the feedback on was someone who was actually married, as she was reading it, she didn't feel like necessarily applied to her anymore, but the way that she was reading it and the way that impacted her is that she was reading it from the perspective of younger her, who really wished that she would have had that, who wished she would have had your advice, that, like, big sister, like, guiding her through her own mistakes to get to where she was now, and she feels like she would have gone through, like, so much less heartbreak if she would have had your book then.
Oh my god,
which, like, made me feel, like, so nostalgic to think about that.
Yes, that's so sweet, and I feel like I definitely relate to that idea, because, like, I've been in a relationship for a few years, but, like, I'll certainly even read fiction about, like, someone dating or someone being single, and I feel like even if you're, like, in a really secure place, you could always apply that to, like, past versions of yourself, and it almost can help you to, like, heal from things that happened that maybe you tabled, and, like, you are technically over and like you've mentally overcome them, but like you're like, wow, that actually like allowed me to part ways with that a little bit more or to think differently about that experience. I feel like I have that experience myself a lot.
Yeah, totally. I definitely felt that reading the friend chapter, like for like rules for friendship, when your friend was running the end of the marathon with
you. Oh my god, Sadie,
like,
I need to know Sadie. Oh my god,
I just started crying, like full on crying, like thinking about that.
I just envision her like leaping over a fence. I don't even know if there was a fence. I envision her leaping over a fence and just like moving with you. And I just think that's so.
I like.
Was it like a partition?
It was like, yeah, there was a bit of like cone maneuvering that she had to get around. But I remember like thinking to myself while I was running, like I remember in the beginning of the race, I had this thought like, oh my God, like I just got to mile two. I have to run like 24 more, like earth.
Yeah.
That's like a lot. And then I remember being like, you cannot think about this like that or else you're never going to get through this. And so I was instead thinking about like, okay, I just need to get every 4 miles is a milestone. And eventually that will lead me to mile like 19, I think, is when she was coming in. So I was like, then if I get to mile 19, then it's over. Cause like that is going to be like that last hour is going to be like a lot different because it's not going to be as, you know, solitary. And I remember I need to get to mile 19. And then like she jumped in and like she was like, yeah, there's been like some drama going on. Like, do you want to hear about it? Like, I don't want to like throw off the race. And I was like, distract me, please.
No,
like,
please. Yes, please tell me about it. I need it.
Like, I need to know.
Vibe check.
One of the best moments.
I love it.
Like, seriously, ever. But everybody loves her now. And I'm actually writing a second book right now. And I was talking to her and I was like, do you want your pseudonym to be the same? And I was like, I think it kind of has to be. Because it's like,
kind of. It has to be.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that your audience didn't fall in love with Sadie upon reading everything about her in the book. And it has to.
Yeah. It's got to stay. It has to be her. So it's going to continue to be Sadie. And I think all the pseudonyms in the book, I mean, there's not many men in my second book, but like all the pseudonyms for my friends, they'll stay the same. Because I'm like, I developed you guys as like little characters, even though like you're real people. And I feel like now I have to carry that over. So it's definitely like a nice thing, watching what parts people react to that I didn't expect.
Yeah. No, the part about friendships was so important because I think friendship breakups and talking about love, romance, etc., friendship breakups are just as paramount, if not more so, than romantic breakups. And I love that you spoke to that because if nothing else, you know, if people, you know, are married, aren't going through, you know, the dating world anymore, I think we can all connect to that from our past. But friendship breakups in general are something we've all probably experienced in our lives and may continue to experience in our lives. And navigating those is so important.
100%. And I think sometimes, too, it's like you go through something like that and you don't even realize that you're going through something like that because no one really like names it. There are plenty of people that I've like drifted apart from and like effectively like broken up with, but like it was never like a sit down conversation where we like decided not to be friends anymore. It just sort of happened. And like, it's hard to process something when people don't like talk about it themselves or like give it a name.
Totally. Yeah. Especially if you don't consider them relationships, because that's what I love so much that you talk about in your book is like friendships are relationships. They're just platonic. And I think that that's something that especially when we're going through a breakup, that sometimes we don't let ourselves believe. We're like, oh, this is just like a friendship that's kind of falling apart, that we don't really give ourselves that like time to grieve it.
Yeah, 100%. I think also like the thing about female friendships specifically is that with a lot of other types of relationships, there's something like that the other party and like you are getting from it. So like with romantic relationships, like, I mean, obviously there's like people who are like asexual, aromantic and all that stuff, but like typically you're getting sex, you're getting intimacy, you're getting partnership, you're getting someone who's going to be like doing acts of service for you that make your life easier in a romantic relationship. Same thing with family. Like if you have a positive relationship to your family, like you're getting something from that relationship. But with female friendships specifically, I feel like it's two people opting into a relationship for nothing except for each other and just like company and conversation and information. And that's just like, to me, just a whole nother level of intimacy. And I think like, that's a reason why people get frustrated with like Rory throughout Gilmore Girls, like to bring it back there, is because Paris, like really, I feel like despite her like jealousy issues, shows up as she matures in that relationship, like just looking for like camaraderie, company and like love from another woman that's like platonic. I think Rory kind of doesn't understand that as much. Like, she looks at it like she's like trying to get, she's not getting anything out of it, and so then she like deems it as like not super high up on her list. But I think Paris Geller like was always like the friend that like Rory really needed and like didn't appreciate that much. And
yeah,
same thing with Lane too, obviously that's like a whole nother thing, but I think it's interesting how like some people like aren't wired to think, you know, that way about other women. And I see it on TikTok all the time, like, oh, I just don't like girls, like I don't want to be friends with them, and I like feel sad about that for people.
Yeah. No, that's interesting that you bring that back to Paris and Rory in terms of friendship, because I think it almost like kind of flip flops. Because if you watch like seasons 1 through 3, it's almost like Rory is teaching Paris how to be a friend.
Yeah.
Like she's like showing up for her in these like really just like generous ways. Like she doesn't ever, you know, like go out of her way to be that same like level of meanness that Paris is to her in high school. But, like, the moment they get to college, it's like all bets are off. She's not her best friend anymore. But like Paris has like almost learned from Rory how to do that.
Yeah.
It's almost like she got the rules from Rory and then Rory stopped playing by the rules.
Rory like kind of abandoned the plot.
Yeah.
But it's like, I just love, I don't know, thinking about female friendships. And I've been really lucky and blessed to have like so many intimate close ones in my life. And I think also my mom like always gave me a great example of what that looked like as well.
Yeah. Speaking of your mom, something that you mentioned at the live show, I guess like segueing into Gilmore Girls, was how like your relationship with Gilmore Girls started because your mom wanted you to watch Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. She was always like a fan. My mom like loves an Amy Sherman Palladino show. And I think that like my mom is like such a wholesome viewer of television, because like I just have this inner critic, and it's like something that I like wish I could shut up, but I think it's a lot because of like studying theater and journalism. I always wanted to be like a theater critic. I always wanted to be like an arts critic, but not from like a way where like any malice was intended. It was more just like, I love analysis. Like, give me like a good New Yorker Atlantic cut piece that's someone analyzing some shit. Like, I am sat. And I always wanted to do that myself. Like, I think so deeply about art. So I think that like my mom, though she doesn't do that, she's such like a wholesome viewer of TV. And like, she just like loves and embraces like storytelling, especially through the television medium. So she wanted me to watch it. And I watched it like on my own, like really like.
Yeah. How old were you then?
In high school. 17 or 16, 15. I have no idea. But like that age range. And I think like I resonated with like different parts of it then that I do now, and like I've had to like, you know, think a lot about that, like the way that we like relate to different characters and how it changes. But I've been definitely like a fan of the show for probably 10 years.
Yeah. Do you ever talk like analytically about it with your mom?
I think,
is she able to do that?
I think that I like open her eyes a lot to different things that like I found that are also like popular analysis like within the fandom, because I think she was kind of just like, she loved it, she loved all the, she like loves like the quirkiness of it and like the cast of characters and like the relationships between the characters. But I think, you know, I've been able to be like, well, you know, this person, like this is how this person could benefit from therapy. You know,
it always comes back to therapy with these girls.
It really does. I'd say my mom is like, she loves Logan and she loves Luke, so she's like a Logan truther for Rory.
Really? Me too.
Yeah, honestly, I just think like people are like that are Team Jess, I think they like are I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think they are mistaking it that they would pick Jess for themselves, which I understand. 100%. But like, if you watch the show, like, I'm sorry, if you're a fan of the show, you have to be able to see that that is not the right person for her.
I mean, like, yeah. As a Team Jess stan myself, I can confirm.
Yeah, you're not, like, you want to have sex with him. Like, you don't want her to.
1,000%.
Do you see the revival? He looks amazing.
Yeah, he looks absolutely incredible.
He's
and
great.
Can relate.
It's like the genre of like, I can fix him girls.
No, yeah. It really is. And I think that growing up, that was something that I identified with very deeply. It was like, I wanted to fix every man that I was in a relationship with. I gravitated towards people that were broken that I felt like I could fix. And I think a lot of that, and that was one of the first things I said on our first episode of Gilmore to Say, is that I romanticized fixing people. And that started with Jess Mariano. I fell in love with people's potential. And that started with the fictional character of Jess Mariano. Did I love watching the two of them? Yes. Is Logan the best boyfriend for Rory? Also, yes. That's just facts.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you.
That's just what it is. Yeah. But speaking of Rory, as I was reading this book, I felt like a lot of your rules could have been like Rory Gilmore needed this book when she was younger. Haley felt like the flings things and no strings chapter would have been the best for her. I kind of think rules for sex also would have been really good for her. Really wish that she had maybe given that a skim before she jumped into bed with Dean.
Yeah, if you would have written a rule for like don't sleep with your married ex-boyfriend, she could have used that.
I always think about that and I'm always like, what? Because I don't want to like blame everything on parenting, but it does really come back to Lorelai. I'm like, what did Lorelai like miss here that like that was like Rory's like choice? And like, I'm not, you know, totally absolving Rory from blame. Obviously, she was the one that chose it. But I think Lorelai's reaction is partly because she knows that she's complicit in that decision because, like, I'm sorry. Like, there was a conversation that wasn't had. And I always wonder, like, because obviously we don't see, like, a ton of conversations about sex between the two of them, like, up until that point. I always wonder, like, what was missed. And I always think about it, like, and, you know, Lorelai kind of viewed herself as Rory's friend more than her mom. Sometimes, a lot of times, and like the boundaries were really, really blurry. And I think like you're not gonna tell your friend, you're not gonna like police your friend's like risque behavior, or like if you notice that your friend is kind of like maybe not the best at making choices, you're not gonna like start policing her like you're her mother, because you're not. And so I think that like that's an interesting thing of like Lorelai really seeing herself as Rory's friend, and it kind of prohibiting her from kind of stepping in as a parent in certain situations. And you know, that is one of the times that Lorelai is like the most angry. Like, she's so angry and disappointed in Rory, but it's like, is she also really disappointed in herself? Because like of how much time you spend with her, you know, Rory's actions are really a reflection of you and your teachings, for lack of a better phrase. And I think that that was definitely evident.
Yeah, we just watched that episode, actually. We just covered it on Patreon. I think it's coming out the week after this episode airs, or the same week. And we actually were... we were watching it very intently, and Lorelai says to her, I did not raise you to be this kind of girl. And I think that is something she's struggling with, is like, where did I go wrong? Where did we go wrong here? Because I could have sworn I did not raise you to be this kind of person who sleeps with someone else's husband. And it was really heartbreaking to watch, because you can see the mental gymnastics that they're both going through while Rory tries to justify this and Lorelai tries to figure out where they went wrong. Because I don't know that I can necessarily pinpoint where exactly Rory would have gotten the idea that that was okay. But she does bring up when Lorelai sleeps with Christopher at the end of season two, when he's like kind of in between breaking up with Sherry and finding out that she's pregnant. And so Rory kind of throws that in her face, and Lorelai's like, whoa, that is not the same thing.
Yeah.
But if Rory perceives it that way, then maybe she does think that that kind of stuff is okay, that she feels like she has permission to sleep with Dean because Dean was her boyfriend first, and Lorelai and Christopher have all of this history.
Yeah.
And so for those reasons, Lorelai felt like it was fine to sleep with Christopher because they have a ton of history. But she also genuinely thought that Christopher and Sherry were broken up. Now, on the flip side, it sounds like Rory also thought that Dean and Lindsay were broken up, even though she definitely should have maybe, I don't know, checked.
Confirmed.
Maybe should have called her. Maybe should have found out. But, you know, you can kind of see where she took a page out of her mom's book. But at the same time, I could also see the side that Lorelai's on, where she's like, I did not raise you to be this kind of person.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
In 2018, Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States. 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who still have not yet been reunified.
Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, an organization called El Otro Lado works to reunify these families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practices.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families. Once reunited, El Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and the counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. If you believe that all families belong together, consider supporting El Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to El Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at elotrolado.org/volunteer. That's elotrolado.org/volunteer. I do think that where Lorelai did go right when it comes to your book is I do think that the rules for heartbreak are something that Lorelai tried to implement heavily into Rory. The wallowing part, like whenever I hear the word wallow, I think of Gilmore Girls. And I think of how Lorelai encourages Rory to wallow after breaking up with Dean the first time. She's like, kid, you need a big, big tub of ice cream and a cry, and you got to watch some movies and you got to move through this. Because if you just sit there and try to kind of curtail it all by like doing these chores and distracting yourself with things, you're never going to move on.
Yeah.
And so I think that she really, I think she really stepped up and kind of took a lot of what you shared about heartbreak and moving on from someone and getting closure and implemented that into her relationship with her daughter.
I definitely agree. And I think, you know, it's hard because like as a kid, you want to have the fun parent. I feel like you like see your friends that have like fun parents and you like want that. You're like, I wish my parent was like fun like that. But then I think like you see so many times in fictional depictions of like the fun parent, like for example, in this situation, Rory and Lorelai, like sometimes like you actually just want a parent. And like, I can't exactly speak to that because I had kind of more of a traditional parent than that. But I feel like you see it all the time in fictional depictions of that kind of relationship where like eventually like the kid is like, I just want you to parent me. Like, I don't want you to be my friend. And I think that it becomes this like this tough thing because it's like, well, all you want is for your parents to be fun. But then eventually you just want them to be parents. And it's kind of like an interesting shift.
And I think what's interesting is like the stability of it, because like when Rory comes out in like the like most egregious like scene in film, television, whatever, is when they show the shot of Rory's bed when Lorelai walks in after they had sex. Like, I can never get over that. But Rory immediately tells her, she's like, I should have talked to you about it before. And Rory immediately goes into this relationship like she's her friend. Yeah. And Lorelai comes at it like an angry parent.
Yeah.
And it's like this like flip-flop of like you never quite know what you're gonna get. Yeah. Like depending on like their perception of the situation. So like Lorelai plays what she calls her mom card all the time. So it's like sometimes you want a friend, sometimes you want your mom, but like I feel like in like traditional parents, like I have more, like I have like a very friendly mom, but she's always been a mom.
Yeah.
And I think that knowing what you're going to get is part of like the, like that expectation of having parents. But like with Rory, it's like, am I going to get my friend or am I going to get my mom today?
Yeah.
Like, am I going to feel like broken down because she's going to get mad at me or is she going to sympathize with me?
Yeah. It's really interesting.
So if there was a chapter in your book that you wish Lorelai would have read, whether it's like teenage years while she was raising Rory, you know, in this period of time that we've met her and she's got either a teenager or a college student who's now exploring, you know, dating, sex, etc., which one would you have her read?
Honestly, maybe the friendship one, because I just don't think she's a good friend. Like, I think she really takes advantage of people and like I just think she's so mean to Suki. Like, there's so many things that she says and does, like looking at it now, that I'm like, damn, like she upsets Suki all the time. Like, they get into so many fights and it's like, why are they getting into these little spats? It's like always Lorelai's fault, like for the most part. Mm-hmm. And just like kind of upsets me. Like some people are clumsy, or like some people just like have anxieties about things. Like, you can't just like, she's just a selfish person. And I think that like, it really like does show in the way that she like treats like her friends, few friends, really. She doesn't have a lot. That's another thing. Like, she's like, you could say that, like, Kirk is her friend and, like, could say that Luke is her friend, but it's like, is that her friend? Like, not really. And then, like, you could say that, like, Miss Patty is her friend or, like, Babette, but it's like, are they really her friends? They're, like, 20, 30 years older than her. I just think she has, like, one friend and she's not nice to her. And, like, it makes me upset. And I think that that's, like, a chapter I would give her, probably.
We did a whole episode on whether or not Lorelai was a good neighbor or a good friend, and like the differences between her relationships with the townies, and if it was just about being a loved neighbor, a beloved neighbor in town, or if people actually saw her as their friend. And I totally agree with you. There's a fine line when it comes to the townies, people like Patty, Babette, you know, it's like, we're neighbors. If we moved away from each other, would I talk to you? Probably not. With Suki and Michelle, probably, I would argue, yes. And maybe before Luke and Lorelai got together, maybe. They were clearly more than just friends. They had a foundation of friendship, but it was always rooted in attraction to each other and the what if that could have been between the two of them. But I don't know that they necessarily would have kept in touch. And so I agree with you. Her best friend is her daughter. That's where she's rooted a lot of her friendship and implemented a lot of her friendship rules, if you will. The only other person I could see is Christopher, and that's also complicated.
And it's like, is that a friend? Like, if we lined up 10 times that they hung out, they had sex for 6 of them. Like, that's not your friend.
One of which they conceived their daughter. Correct.
Exactly. It's like, that's, you're just not friends. And so it's like,
yeah,
it's just interesting. Like, where are her friends? Like, where is, like,
where are they?
Also, where are your mom friends? Like, I'm not a mom, but from what I can understand from, like, watching other people become moms, it is really important to be around people that are also moms. And Suki, like, becomes a mom. And I'm not saying, like, if you're a mom, you can't have friends who aren't moms. Not at all. If you know me and, like, you know what I stand for, like, I think that everybody should be valued equally in your life. But, like, when you're becoming a mom, which, like, is a massive change to, like, body, mind, spirit, soul, etc. And even if, like, your baby daddy is around, he's not going to understand, can't empathize. It's just, like, it's simply different. So it's, like, where were those people for her? I mean, obviously her situation was so different, but where are they now is what I mean. Like, surely, like, Dean has parents, or surely, like, there are people in the town. Like, she does not try with Miss Kim. And I know that that's, like, a different situation because she's tough. But if it was me, I'm thinking asking Miss Kim for, like, lunch every now and again, like, trying to, like, kind of chop it up with my daughter's best friend's parents. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like she wants to be friends with Lane and Rory and, like, not any adults. It's like, where are the adults? Like, you're 30s. Like, you should have some people in their 30s around you that you know and, like, hang out with.
We always joke there's, like, the other side of Stars Hollow, because, like, there's no other teenagers in town either. It's just Lane and Rory. And, like, maybe Dean, of course. Sometimes Jess. But, like, the whole, like, Stars Hollow High is, like, in the middle of town, and we never see any other teenagers. And so we call it, like, the other side of Stars Hollow, where, like, the other parents live, who, like, they're all friends, and Lorelai just never, like, was she connected not with them, I guess.
Like, listen, like, I did not grow up with a PTA mom. Like, I grew up with a mom who showed up, but she was not, like, chopping it up with the PTA ladies, like, sucking dick and, like, you know, kumbayaing with them, because she thought it was annoying, and I totally get that. But, like, Lorelai, like, is kind of nasty and bitter to them. Like, she's like, whenever she does, like, do something, it's like, what if you just, like, put on a smile and, like, didn't complain and, like, didn't make inappropriate jokes and, like, be yourself? But, like, these people, it's not the end of the world. They're not, like, heinous, horrible people. Like, they're fellow parents of the kids at your school. Like, you're not better than them. And I feel like she, like, kind of just, like, goes into rooms and makes enemies a little bit, like, especially with Chilton and everything. It's like, dude, like, just, like, shut up. Like, just sit down. Like, just, these people aren't, they're not evil. You know what I mean? Like, they're maybe not your cup of tea, and that's fine. But, like, you do not have to, like, come in on this, like, moral high horse of, like, I'm not like you guys kind of vibe, which I feel like is what she brings.
That really is every time. Yeah. Like, you were talking about when she goes to Chilton, it's like, they're already her enemies before she even walks in. She doesn't know anything about them. And this is in, what is it? Like, mother, like, daughter in season 2, when they have a little fashion show, she ends up loving them. They end up, like, being so great.
And then the girl
from Desperate Housewives. What's her name?
Oh, yeah.
Brenda Strong.
Yes.
Yeah. They end up having a great time. And then where do they end up going? Never see her again.
Like, who whose parents are, like, that's the thing that I feel like sometimes, and I think, like, Amy Sherman Palladino, like, I love, like, her world building and, like, her character work, but then I think she focuses so hard on that that sometimes, like, what we're saying, like, where were the other kids at Stars Hollow High? Like, that's kind of, like, a empty plot hole, and then it's, like, whose parents were the, like, who's, where were those parents' kids? Like, who were they? And then, like, also, like, where did they go? Like, Lorelai seemingly, like, struck up a relationship with them, and then, like, they never talked again? Where'd they go?
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, that's one of the plot holes we've talked about, is everything that happened with the Booster Club. You know, everything that happens in that one episode of season three where she gets confronted by, like, that band of moms because she talks about sex in the classroom. And it's Debbie Fincher's mom. And she, like, they're talking about Debbie Fincher. Or, no, it's Debbie Fincher is the name of the mom. And then she's, what, Kathy's mom?
Death. Yeah.
So, you know, you never get eyes on any of the kids from Stars Hollow High, with the exception of Dean, Jess, Lindsay, etc. As long as they're kind of pertinent to Rory's world, which of course is hard because she no longer goes to the school. But like, you know, at the same time, I kind of wish that we would have gotten a little bit of that, because you're right. A lot of the interaction she has with parents sans the Booster Club meetings. She has a couple. And maybe her relationship with Max Medina, who's not a parent, he's a teacher, is kind of all about why she's different.
Yeah.
And it would have been interesting to see her kind of bond with someone. We've always talked about how we wish that Liz, Jess's mom, you know, if we ever got a prequel of what Lorelai's life was like before we met her in the pilot, and we kind of got to zero in on her days at the Independence Inn and working her way up from being a maid to running the inn itself, and maybe, you know, meeting Luke and kind of the before times in between her leaving her parents' house and when we meet her in the pilot, that it would have been really interesting to see if she and Liz could have developed a friendship before Liz fled town with Jess, because Jess and Rory are the same age. And so therefore Liz and Lorelai must have been around the same age. They must have been really young moms. And I wonder how she would have done having someone to commiserate with on kind of navigating that at the age of 16, 17, whatever age Liz had her, Liz had Jess. You know, if it would have been different for Lorelai to have someone who understood what she was going through a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. It's like, where are all these people? And, like, surely they're there because, again, Dean is Rory's age, Lindsay's Rory's age, all these people that are coming up, like, the people that, there's just, like, so many people that, like, where are the rest of their, like, family and friends?
Yeah, they're missing. That's why we call it the other side of Stars Hollow, because it's like, I want to see that TV show of, like, all the people who, like, maybe hate the Gilmore Girls.
They have to hate them. Because think about it, if you were just, like, vibing out, like, let's say you're in a book club and you're just vibing out, enjoying your book club, and then someone invites this other person to the book club and they show up, and immediately everything that comes out of their mouth is, like, condescending, sarcastic, and low-key about why they're not like you and why they're better than you, you'd be like, get this person out of our book club. Like, who, why are they here?
We were having a great time.
Yeah, like, why are they here? This is something we do for fun, and, like, this is not fun.
Well, yeah. On that topic, one of the hot takes you brought to the stage when we had our live show was your feelings about Lorelai and her relationship with her parents. So for anybody who wasn't at our live show, I would love for you to kind of expand on how you feel about Emily and Richard and their relationship with Lorelai.
Yeah, you know, I can't speak to, like, what it's like to have a fraught relationship with your parents, but, like, I don't want to, like, be insensitive to what she was going through, but I think people take it a little far online. They're like, she was being emotionally abused, and I'm like, she had rich parents, she was a bit of a rebel, she didn't want to subscribe to, like, the high society, like, cotillion lifestyle. I'm sorry, like, okay, privilege. Like, that's just, so many people have that story of, like, their parents, like, are, like, Booster Club, cotillion, country club people with a stick up their ass, and they're not like that. It's really not the worst thing. And, like, then she gets pregnant, and we don't know exactly, like, what went down, but we know she runs away. And, like, in my head, I don't know, if I was 16, 17, told my parents I got pregnant, they would not be happy. Yeah, there would be a little bit of processing time. Let's give it 3 days, 4 days. And then they would say, we're going to show up and support you because we love you. And we're not happy about this. And, like, this isn't a jump for joy situation. But, like, you're going to make this decision, then we're going to do it together. I just think maybe Lorelai is incredibly impulsive. And, again, I don't want to be insensitive to her situation. Like, I can't speak to what that's like. But I don't know. People have such worse time. People have like sincerely abusive parents. People come out as gay and then they're told like get the fuck out of the house. Like I just like watch that and I'm like, girl, like these people clearly want to be in your life so fucking badly. Now they don't understand how to. And you go ask them for help and they offer you hundreds of thousands of dollars to give your child everything that your child needs, everything that your child wants, every dream your child has ever had. They're offering their resources, their money, and their time. All they want from you is one dinner a week and you have the audacity to complain? Like, you're kidding. Like, I never understood it. I was just like, I get it. Like, you've been through it with these people and like, that is all well and good. But then honestly, tell your kid you're not going to private school and you're not going to Harvard. Like, I don't know. Like, don't ask them for the money then if you can't handle it, because you choose. She makes the choice. It's not like there's no choice. Again, there are single parents living in this country who do not come from a mass amount of privilege, who their children have to figure it out on their own and have to take out mass amounts of love. Like, I just think I watch it back and I'm like, are you kidding? Like, it just makes me laugh. I'm like, the world is such a dark and really unfortunate place. And people have situations. And like, I understand you can drown in an ocean, you can drown in a puddle, but like the shit people are going through, the loans people are taking out, the crippling student debt people have for a lifetime because they just want to put themselves through college and get an education. Like, how are you complaining? Like, she really just does not stop complaining. And I just don't get it. It just aggravates.
Yeah.
Me. Like, I almost can't watch.
It really is odd. I think that like the problem that Lorelai had is she really never does express gratitude, like, in any form.
Never.
Like, she will say, thank you, daddy. Like, there will be, like, sometimes, but, like, it only, like, lasts so far as, like, to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And, like, the next thing that she does to bother, that bothers them. And, like, I will say there are things that, like, Emily and Richard do that are, like, really manipulative towards her. And so I can definitely understand why she would be hesitant with them. But I do understand the discourse online simply because people use Lorelai's situation as a jumping off point for their own experiences.
Yeah.
Because we have a reel that I think hit like 8 or 9 million of us like joking about the fact that she gets hundreds of thousands of dollars in exchange for martinis every week. And everyone just like went in with every single trauma that has ever happened to them. And like, that's why Lorelai was in the right. So it's like hard to talk about sometimes because it's like, what's on the screen? What's happening on the page, so to speak? And like, what are you bringing in from your life? Because I think that's what happens so often is like, if you're actually paying attention to what's happening, like Lorelai is not saying thank you. They are being manipulative in 100%. Like their own right. But I think at the end of the day, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I think my thing is too, if you can relate to this and like this brings you comfort to watch and like that is amazing. And like, you're absolutely entitled to that, to bring your lived experience to this and whatever.
Totally.
I think that I'm also entitled to though question Lorelai specifically. I'm not talking about your lived experience and the way that you have been able to feel seen and heard. That is beautiful. That is your right. That is something that I'm glad that you've been able to, you know, use this show to kind of like understand or work through yourself. But I also think that we're allowed to sit here at the same time, separate from that, and be like, oh my God, like, how do you not? Like, I don't want to be like, check your privilege, because that's like such a dumb thing to say. But I'm just like, oh my God. Like, and Rory is honestly so grateful and she really gets it, I feel like. And thank God, because like, she will actually like, and she wants a relationship with them, which is the other thing that kind of makes me sad. I totally understand why Lorelai's relationship with them is fraught and why she's hesitant. They do manipulate her. But it isn't fair to withhold that opportunity from your daughter when she is an adult that's making her own choices. Like when she's 18 years old and wanting more of a relationship with them and wanting to stay over their house. And like Lorelai gets butthurt. I don't even remember when that happens, but there's definitely times like that.
And there's several.
When they get in the fight and Rory goes to stay there, it's like, and it's unfair that Emily like leverages that over Lorelai or whatever, but it's like Rory does want a relationship with them independent, and she knows everything that happened. She gets the worst of the tea about them on a regular basis, but she's making that decision for herself, and I think like, you know, is very very grateful, and she understands like what they've not sacrificed because it's like no skin off their back, but like what they've done for her, like she can acknowledge that. I think that's at least nice. And obviously I want to acknowledge that like they are definitely manipulative to Lorelai, but sometimes I'm just like, God, like, do you ever stop complaining? Like, you don't have to do this. You don't have to. You don't.
You don't have to. You could, she could go to public school. Stars Hollow High is right there.
Yeah. And isn't she a genius? Like,
yeah.
That's the whole thing, too. I'm like, I don't understand how this bitch got into all these Ivies. Like, obviously, they were calling up with a connection. Like, what was her resume? I always wonder what was on the resume.
Well, especially yeah. since, like, you know, the episode in early season two when Paris finally is like, yeah, you need these things on your resume in order to get into a good college. You can't just have good grades. And Rory's like, what? You can't? I'm like, girl, what have you been doing?
I'm sorry, like, you never would have gotten into an Ivy if you realized that, like, right before applying, then shoved all this fake shit that you went and did in order to get into the Ivy on the resume. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm always wondering.
Coming from an Ivy grad yourself.
Well, not really. It's a grad school. A little different. But,
but still. But
that's all right. Like, I'm just like, what? Like, what's yeah. going on? Sometimes I'm just like, what's going on?
What's going on is really a good question. It's a great but question. you were talking about how a lot of people bring their like lived experience into the show, and you mentioned at our live show one of my favorite, like, I guess, like, comparisons someone has pulled out of the show and applied to their own lives, and that is how you see you and your boyfriend from the show.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this. It was actually my mom who was like, you guys are so Paris and Doyle. And I was like, that's so true. Well, I'm always like so Paris and like I'm obsessed with her and Team Paris. Like, I just think she's hilarious and neurotic and like insane, but also just like so relatable. And like, she's so type A. And like, I don't think that everything about her is like me, but I definitely like feel that energy. And then like, her and Doyle's relationship, like, that has to be top of my list. Like, favorite. Like, it just goes down as, like, one of my faves in the whole entire, like, series. It's amazing. She's my favorite character on the show, I would say. Love Paris. I love Lane. And I'm trying to think. I love Michelle. I love Suki. They're all, like, up there for me, I would say.
You yeah. love all the friends, the Gilmore Girls friends.
I love the Gilmore friends. And I'm like, I would be such a good friend to you guys. Like, just let me into the group. Like, I can pull up to the function.
Let me in, please.
Do you yes. think you could be a good friend to Paris? Or, like, do you think that maybe you're too much alike?
I think we would, like, maybe butt heads. But she's definitely more intense than I am. So I think that we could be good friends. Like, maybe not early seasons Paris, because that kind of energy, I'm just like, God.
Yeah.
But later.
You could help her get ready for her date with Jamie, though. 100%. When she, like, Rory's doing her hair.
Could have killed that.
Yeah.
Rory was like, Rory did a decent job of that. But like, Rory's like way of like helping Paris is sometimes just like being like, Paris, stop. And it's like, Paris, you're fine. And I'm like, no, Paris is like actually anxious about this. She says she's not genetically like set up for dating. Like, it's not like in her head. She's actually nervous. Like, you need to be like super empathetic, like, to that situation. And I feel like sometimes Rory will just be like, Paris, you're fine, or like, Paris, like, stop freaking out. And I'm yeah, like, no, this
Paris
girl, like,
you.
It's funny, but like, she's freaking out because she's scared. And it's like, oh yeah. I love her.
A boy loves her, you know? Or likes her, rather.
In regards to Rory, having been a journalism major as you were, how were you able to connect with her despite kind of disagreeing with kind of a lot of the things that she did in the show and maybe the way that she treated her friends?
I think she's like ambitious, and I definitely feel that I'm ambitious as well. I think that like watching her go through journalism school, like, I wouldn't say inspired me, because I know I always wanted to be a writer, but it's definitely like a fun thing. Like, I love watching like her experiences and then like thinking about them in regard to mine. But to be honest, she's my least favorite. I just can't, like, I'm like, you really think you're that entitled to a job at the New York Times? One person tells you you're a bad writer and you're going to quit. Like, grow a spine, girl. Like, we need to, like, you know, you're never going to get anywhere if, like, every single time someone is like, you're not good, you're like, I quit, you know?
And fall apart.
That,
yeah.
We can bring that back to the internet in the beginning. Like, we were all saying, can you imagine every time you got a comment, you were like, we're going to quit? Like, you guys.
Close
it up.
We
would never be standing here.
All of our reviews would have us quitting.
You would get one bad review and you'd be like, that's throwing the towel in. And like, I feel like, you know, I always say this, like, no one leaves a positive Yelp review. It's always the naysayers that are going to be the loudest. And like, mm-hmm. there's going to be like so many silent lovers. I feel like Rory Gilmore, she wasn't really understanding that.
Yeah.
And like,
there were so many people.
Well,
she was Oh, but totally. But there were so many people cheering her on her entire life. And I think they were so vocal and so loud that anybody who was a naysayer kind of faded into the background enough that she was able to use like everything with Paris in high school as fuel. And, you know, when she got that D on that paper with Max Bedina, she was like, no, I'm going to try harder. It's going to be fine. And of course, as soon as she gets to college and she doesn't necessarily have that support system rallying around her 24/7, all bets are off.
It's she also the town. She's like the town darling, which is like another.
Yeah.
She's like
on top of the Christmas tree.
Seriously, like that woman could do no wrong in the town. Like that's another point of like, where were the rest of the kids? Like it was like they only knew
where one were they?
Kid, right? Like she only knew one and it was just her.
It was just her. Last question before we wrap up with you. As a theater kid, how'd you feel about the musical and the revival?
Oh my God, I loved it. The whole revival is like my favorite. Like, I think it's the best. Like,
really?
I know people really? Are like, gonna so be like, no. But I feel like I was like in a place where like, it was just the perfect time to watch it. I love revisiting it. Just fabulous. And you know what? Like, people hate how it ended. No, like, give me that drama. Give me that like stupid circular ending. Like, people, I know people like are enraged by that and they're like, it's such low hanging fruit. I'm like, give me low hanging fruit. This is not like, this isn't like,
give me Sutton Foster, give me Christian Borle, give me the Christian Borle and Sutton Foster reunion right now.
Just give me like, yeah, just give me like, make it a little cheesy. Like, I think people sometimes forget what they're watching. Like, everybody that was mad that Rory's like pregnant at the end or whatever, I don't know. Like, I'm, you know what? There's no spoiler. People have obviously watched that. But it's like,
yeah, no, we don't do spoilers here. It's just, everything's spoiled.
But it's like, of course that's how it ends. Come on. Like, did you not watch the show? That's how it needed to end. At least I think. People like want more, but I'm like so, I have peace for how it ended. It really like, it brought me full circle. Like, I love how it ended. Love that final.
Can I be honest? You're one of the first people who have like vehemently loved the revival. Most people are like hated it. I like how it ended. Like, I like the ending.
And but we agree that we don't need anymore. We talk about this a lot on our show.
We don't need it anymore.
Because I think, listen, like, there are so many things. Like, people are like, Glee is my favorite TV show, right? People are like, Glee revival, like Glee reboot. I'm like, no. Like, it is a masterpiece as it is. Like, would I love to watch them? I would love to watch them in perpetuity at the ages that they were in 2008 at that moment in time. But that we don't get that. That's the beautiful thing about life. We don't get that. We get this and then we make peace with it and we revisit it whenever we want. And then there's going to be something else wonderful and lovely. But all good things have to come to an end or else they start becoming bad. Look at sex.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, girl.
Take a look at it. It's a cringe fest over there. And like, you know what? It's my favorite show. And I truthfully have no bad things to say about it. And just like that. Because like, I just can't let it be bad. It has to be pleasant because it's like my favorite thing. But seriously, look at what they did to themselves.
I know. I just started a second podcast called In Just Like Her, and it's revisiting all of Carrie's columns from the beginning and answering her questions through a 2024 lens. And I would actually love to have you on for the Breakup Rules episode because I feel like your book could so perfectly fit in there because it's such a timeless show and they took such a timeless show and dropped it into like the early 2020s and had no idea what to do with it. But am I still going to watch it? Sure. Oh, but not everything needs to keep going. It doesn't. And that's how we feel about Gilmore Girls. So
100%. It's not how I feel about this conversation. I am sad that we have to end this.
I know. Because I feel like we could literally talk for hours. But thank you so much for being here with us. Yeah, it was great to revisit the conversations that we started on stage last fall, and we'll definitely have to have you back at some point when we talk revival because we're the first one we've met who's been like,
I know,
yes, revival.
I'm just gonna become an honorary third podcaster to talk about loving the revival so much.
please come back because like genuinely we've never talked to anyone who loved it that much, so you'll have to come back maybe for your second book. Do you have a title for it yet?
Yes, it's called Does Anyone Else Feel This Way?
Oh, perfect. Such a perfect second book. I can't wait.
Thank you so much, guys. I'll have to give you copies and when they're out. And I appreciate you guys.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
It's so fun. I love always moments I can share with you both. So thank you.
Oh, thanks, Eli.